I think it's nice that we share the same sky.
What you mean?
Well, like, sometimes at playtime, I look up at the sky, and if I can see the sun then, I think that the fact that we can both see the sun, so even though we're not actually in the same place and we're not actually together, we kind of are in a way, you know? Like, we're both underneath the same sky, so kind of together.
Hiya everyone, my name's Dirk, and I'll be your tour rep for episode 45 of the Movie Mixtape. I've only just travelled in from Torremolinos, and joining me is my very good friend, Marty Dale. Marty Dale, how are you?
Hi Dirk, I'm good, how are you?
I'm pretty good. People, if you're joining us for the first time and you heard that I started talking first, you may think I'm in control of this podcast, but no, the boss is Marty.
It's me, the boss. I guess that's official. Mikey said it too, so it counts, I guess. It's real.
We all knew. Everybody listening knew that Marcy was the boss, so don't worry.
Mm-hmm. And speaking there, in the dulcet tones of a New Yorker now living somewhere else, it is, he's so hot, he's hurting my feelings, Mikey P. Mikey P, how are you doing?
Hello, I'm getting used to this
chair. I listened to that song today. I'm sorry, that's just funny that I was listening to that song today.
And were you also thinking about Mikey? Because I do every single time.
I was doing some sweet dad dance moves to it, like this movie. We'll get into it.
So here we are, yeah, episode 45. Hello, everybody at home. We're going to get into in a minute what we're going to discuss later on. But we thought, because, listen, we've been away, right? But now we're back in town. And we thought we'd give you an update, if you've not listened to the Movie Mixtape before, about the type of stuff that we do. There's the three of us here, and we talk about movies that we love. But every four episodes, we come up with a theme, a mixtape theme. And for this mixtape, we have called it Summer Break. That's right, Marcy, isn't it?
Yeah, summer break. So
summer
gone away over summer break, but I think most people call their break summer break. And Mikey made a good point that by the time this comes out, it will officially be summer break for a lot of people. So summer break, there we go. That's what it is.
Summer in 2024. So that is the name of this mixtape, Summer Break. Mm-hmm. But what we'll do, we'll go in a bit of a round table over three episodes. Marcy will pick a movie related to the mixtape theme, then I'll pick one, and then Mikey will pick one. And previously what we've done for our fourth episode to round off the mixtape, we've had friends come on and they've picked a movie they really love that they share with us. And we've created a beautiful four movie mixtape of all films that we love. Positivity, love flowing through us. But we're not going to have friends on just yet because we've lovingly embraced Mikey as our third permanent host. So we're going to do something different for our fourth episode going forward. We have spared no expense in creating the mixtape Mixtologist Cocktail Shaker. And in our cocktail shaker, we'll put all our names and randomly one of our names will be drawn out and they get a second movie in that mixtape.
Mm-hmm.
I just did the blow in your mind thing. Just did that. Mikey, how do you feel about this development?
I was going to say, who's auditing this? Because if, you know, Dirk keeps getting the last pick, we're going to be like,
I know.
I think we have to have somebody else choosing the pushing the mixologist button. I'm excited. That's a good idea. That's a great idea.
If Dirk keeps getting picked, then we need to have an intervention for, you know, alcoholism.
It is a great idea. And you know who came up with it? The boss. The boss. Marcy Dale. She comes up with all our ideas. So that's it. That's what we're going to do. And we're probably going to play a little bit loose with the release schedule. We're aiming for fortnightly episodes because, you know what? We all got stuff going on at the minute. So we're going to not be weekly for a while at least. But fortnightly is what we're aiming for.
Is
okay.
Is okay. Fortnightly commonly used in England? I don't think that's really been used in America in common time.
Are you serious?
What is it? That's 2 weeks.
We could get t-shirts printed up with that. Fortnightly, the movie mixtape.
Wow.
Oh my goodness.
They're going to think we're a video game podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah, so a fortnight is 2 weeks. I'll translate that for okay. You Yanks.
See, Mikey was nice enough to ask. I just usually just nod my head and go, uh-huh. Okay.
I've heard in movies, like old movies, they talk about that like with, you know, ships and stuff like that, but never.
You are right. Boats are so old-fashioned.
I meant like with masts, ships with masts and sails.
Sailboats.
Damn it. Oh. Pirate ships.
Dirk hates pirates. Oh my God, yeah. This is so funny.
No pirate mix.
I can't believe we're dragging up my dislike of pirates.
Man, I mean, we learned last week that Mikey, or last episode, Mikey hates pigeons. Dirk hates pirates.
I don't.
Yeah, you're afraid of them.
I was defending people that are afraid of them.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Uh-huh. Sure.
Yeah. Man of the people, Mikey P, defending people who are pigeon phobic.
Mm-hmm.
Don't put pigeons on a t-shirt just in case. Okay. So yeah, that's it. Mm-hmm. That is what we're going to be doing going forward. So it's Marcy's pick. This is the start of a new mixtape, episode 45, Summer Break. Why don't you fill us in, Marce?
So Summer Break, this mix is, you know, we did take an extensive break. I think I did have this idea too, that, you know, what was the best thing you think you watched, or one of the best things you watched, like while we were on our break, and then like we wanted to just share it with each other. And the reason we were on break, I had a baby.
What?
And she's
it's a long break.
She's the best thing ever, and she's so much fun. And you guys got to meet her last week, and that was fun too.
She came around the house for a cup of tea.
Yeah, she did. We let her fly by herself, you know. But her name is Kaya, and kind of funny tying to this movie a little bit. So, you know, for a little bit, we didn't know what we were having. And Dan and I, Dan didn't like any of the names I was picking out. But, you know, we both like Kaya for a girl. And funny enough, my introduction to Paul Mescal, he was on a show called Normal People a couple years ago, which is based off the Sally Rooney book. And I loved his character so much on that show. His name was Connell. And we were possibly going to, if we had a little boy, we were going to name him Connell after Paul Mescal's character, Normal People. Yep. So I'm a big Paul Mescal fan, and we're going to get to talk about Paul Mescal today. So full circle, everybody. We did it.
Why are we talking about him?
So we are covering the movie After Sun because I love sad movies. I also would very much like to go to the country of Turkey, and I love Paul Mescal. So this movie was made for me. So yay.
So that's what we're doing. That's what we're going to chat about in a minute. Do you say 2022 or 2022?
I like to say 2022. That's
me
just me
too. Though. 2022.
What about you, Mikey? What do you say?
Yeah. Yeah, 2022, yeah. Okay. I think 2000 end is very 2000 end saying. Is a very 2000 end saying.
We're all in agreement. Everybody touch the video screen. Everybody touch the video screen. Just spoilers at home.
And then a rainbow pops up.
Just spoilers at home. I'm the only one touching the video screen. Nobody else has
Captain Planet's going to show up. This is how we summon Captain Planet. Oh my gosh. Look at us.
Just to say, Kaya is one of the most beautiful babies I've ever seen. Congratulations.
Oh, Mikey. Thank you.
Also, when you said Paul Mescal, we were talking about him, and I had to Google who Paul Mescal was. And having seen this movie, I didn't know it was the guy in this movie. Yeah.
God, Mikey, this is amazing.
So for the benefit of Mikey, one of the hosts of this podcast, we are doing After Sun, the 2022 film written and directed by Charlotte Wells, starring Paul Mescal as Callum and Frankie Corio as Sophie. But yeah, Mas, tell us, how's your pelvic floor? Is it intact?
Oh my God. Love it. Miss this so much. Let me tell you. So being a mom is awesome. But stressful. And I just want to say, you guys did not warn me at all how stressful it is to be a parent. So thanks for nothing. It's not like, you know, we had to like plan episodes around children before or anything like that. So
I think it was the daily correspondence where we told you, like, good luck.
Yeah.
Me and Dirk, like, yeah, laughing to each other and be like, oh, she thinks she's going to have time for anything.
I, you know, what's really funny though, like, before I had her, Dirk was like, well, how long of a break do you want to take? And I was like, ah, I'll be fine with like just a month. And then a month went by and I was like, yeah, I need longer. You were right. Ha ha ha. The one time I will say it, Dirk was right.
It's hard, Mikey, to reason with Marcy at the best of times. But obviously when those pregnancy hormones are flowing through the veins, you don't want to enrage the beast. So when she told me she would be back up in a few weeks, I was like, fine, okay, we'll just leave that there. We'll leave that there and then see what happens. But Kaya is a beautiful and amazing Marcy. You and Dan, congratulations.
Thank you.
And what has been the first movie that Kaya has watched? Is it High and Low by Akira Kurosawa? Or
we have taken her to the drive-in twice. So we would drive in pretty close to us, and it's pretty easy to take a baby to the drive-in rather than a movie theater. So she has seen, well, fallen asleep through Ant-Man and the Wasp: Quantumania, and also the Super Mario Brothers movie.
Wow. Nice.
Yep. Good times.
What did she give them on Letterboxd?
You know, her letterbox is private. Oh, she will disclose that information later at a later date, and we'll get into that when we get into it.
Well, to be fair, I'm not even friends with her on Facebook yet. I'm waiting for it to accept. I've been waiting for
just
the last
Dan and
five
I
months.
Are her only friends on there for now. For now, we'll see what happens in a couple weeks.
Yeah, being a parent is amazing, and what's the word I'm looking for? The most fulfilling thing probably I do with my life, but also the most energy draining. So if we need to take a break while we're recording this for coffee, any other recreational drugs, that's fine. Okay? Just let us know.
I mean, Marcy's already recording lying on the floor. What else do we have to
do? I mean, yeah, that's where I live now. I live here on my $850 rug.
Yes. We've been peppering this opening with a load of wink, wink. Have you seen this movie? Haven't we? This is what you expect from a high level movie podcast like the Movie Mixtape. What do you want to do? Do you want to get into the synopsis? What do you feel?
Yeah. I actually, it's so funny. Before I do the synopsis, I just want to say, I really love this movie, but I think a big reason actually why I love this movie so much is because I'm a parent now, and I just wanted to say, like, you really do view movies so differently after you become a parent. It is very crazy. And my little girl was just about a month old when I watched this for the first time, and Deanne was holding her while we were watching it together. And I think that was a huge reason why I basically sobbed the whole movie.
Wow.
So I will get into my synopsis. I hope you're proud of me. I did not cop out and do the a dad's am I right for this. but I get a certain feeling from this movie. We will get into it. So I wrote a poem for my synopsis. And I swear to God, if you yell at me and you're like, you didn't cover the movie, I just, no, this is it. This is me. This is me doing.
If there's one thing I know about our synopsis, they never cover the movie. But that,
no.
So it doesn't matter.
Okay. All right. Well, I will get started on my synopsis. My dad was huge for me in every single way. My time with him was rare, but always a special day. I remember our laughs and swims and our favorite song. I remember the days he seemed far away and sometimes even gone. I try to hold on to things that make me happy, but when I think of it now, it feels mostly crappy. When I have these thoughts, I stare at the wall and look back on everything and try to love it all. There we go.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Yeah. And I think that kind of reflects what happens in the movie. So did you plan that? Mm-hmm. Did you plan that?
Yeah. So I actually, I thought, well, it kind of leads perfectly to where I want to start to talk about this movie. I actually want to talk about the ending, and I think it helps better understand the movie completely, and it definitely helped me more on my rewatch with it. Are you guys okay with that? Would you guys be okay talking about the ending first?
Okay with whatever you want to do.
Okay.
You're the one who's just had a baby.
So, you know, this movie is about Callum and Sophie, a dad and a daughter. But at the very end of the movie, you know, they don't live together. You know, he even lives in London now. So they're Scottish. He doesn't live in Scotland anymore. He lives in London. And they go on a holiday together, and it's him dropping her off at the airport, you know, before she goes back home. And the end of the movie, like, there's a camcorder throughout this whole movie. It takes place in the 90s, and they have a camcorder, and they're filming some of their holiday and whatnot. And he turns off the camcorder, and he goes down the hallway into, like, this dance rave that you've seen him in throughout the movie. But what that symbolizes to me is that after this holiday, after he turns off the camcorder, his relationship, for whatever reason, we don't know why the reason is, his relationship with Sophie's over, and this is her looking back on the holiday and maybe some context clues as to why her dad's not in her life anymore. And I mean, you can make assumptions that maybe, you know, unfortunately, like, Callum might have ended his life, or maybe he just decided he wasn't a good enough dad for Sophie. But that ending lets you know, like, that's it. That was, like, really the last time they had together. And I think it's symbolic that it's him turning off the camcorder and he's done filming. He's done, you know, being a part of the movie, essentially, of Sophie's life. So I think that kind of helps understand a lot more of the earlier stuff. So what do you guys think? Is that what you got from the ending of this movie?
Wow. Yeah, first I want to say, when I was trying to make the decision when to rent this movie, I paid the extra dollar for HDX. And just to find some, like, camcorder footage. And I was like, man, I could have got that dollar back. This is all just like...
Send the bill to Marcy.
The end of the movie, you're actually... I will say, if we're going to talk about the end of the movie, this is when I was glued to the movie. This is where all the emotion is. I will be honest, like, the beginning of the movie, I love how it's filmed. Absolutely love how it's filmed. They're like photographs. But there was a lot of nuances. I think it's the kind of day I was having or the type of mood I was in. Sometimes this happens where you're just not in the mood for certain things. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't in the mood to kind of feel or to live. They felt very much like, you said Charlotte Wells. I think this felt very much like a memory she had that she was recreating mm-hmm. with a lot of these shots. There's a, in particular in the beginning of the movie where Callum, what's his name?
Callum.
The dad. Callum, he goes outside. It's like a sleeping scene. She's sleeping. You hear her breathing, which almost feels like a memory even. And a long take of him going outside, and we just see this bad angle of him outside smoking a cigarette, doing, I don't know what you call this outside, his movements. They're wacky. But it's a long take, and it felt very much like she recreated a memory, which was beautiful. Mm-hmm. In terms of, like, a story, I don't know, I started nitpicking, like, it had, like, the tone of, like, the A24 ominous tone type of, like, feel. Like, we're going to try to, what do they call this? Like, a tearjerker. Like, we want you to cry right off the bat. And I wasn't feeling it. The end of this movie, The last half hour, was where it captivated me, though. Because all those emotions, I think, at the beginning were very... minimal, but I think it added to the climactic ending. It was an emotional climactic ending. I didn't even understand, to be honest, that was, it's a great take where we're watching, it kind of pans over and we're watching an older and a grown up woman watch this mm-hmm. video footage, and it keeps panning, goes back to the airport where he's filming, and he turns it off and he goes into the hallway. I honestly mm-hmm. thought that was the mom watching the daughter come back and watching her footage, and now that you said it, I didn't realize that was her growing up.
Sophie when she's older, yeah, and that she's a mom now. She has a son, yeah, with her partner, yeah.
That was her. I thought that was the mom.
Yeah,
I thought that was Sophie. The mom. That's yeah. I kind of missed that. Yeah, I feel almost dumb, almost that I didn't pick up this up.
I feel like this is a good movie for a rewatch. I know maybe you might never want to, but I loved it the first time, but I loved it even more the second time watching it. Just
yeah,
because
that's...
you pick up so much more and you realize so much more why things are happening the way that they are and why we see them the way that we're seeing them. Yeah.
Super it's fascinating.
Such a, I think it's such a clever movie. That's why I really, really love it. So.
Dirk, did you realize that was her watching it at the end?
Yeah. Because I'm real smart.
I'm an idiot.
I'm real smart.
Got it.
You forget that I'm educated in the English schools, unlike yourself, who was educated in American schools. It's a bold choice, Marcy, to start talking about the ending. Try and contextualize it right from the beginning. Because for me, one of the beautiful things of this film was really just kind of living in their relationship and not really knowing why, but every so often feeling a little bit of dread and then coming back from that dread and then feeling a little bit again, but then coming back again and never really reaching a point whereby anything really bad happened. But they were, but noticing little hints with Callum, the dad, and some hints were less subtle than others and I don't mean that in a negative way. There are different points where it was like, it was really obvious something was not right with Callum. But the end scene where they part, I'd already lost it by that point. I'd already kind of, I was an emotional wreck by that scene. And I'd lost it. I'd lost it at their final day, their final night on their holiday. And that was when I kind of, that's when, for me, that was the, almost the climax. That was the climax. I know it's not the final bit that we see when we see Callum walking off, but that was their final moment together. And I felt that was visceral. That was real. I knew that was their final moment together when they were dancing and embracing and they were so in love with each other. But I knew that was it.
And like poetically enough, it's Under Pressure. And the lyric is, this is our last dance. And it keeps like popping up, you know, them with their last dance together. Yeah.
Yeah. I think the soundtrack does a lot of the lifting on the narrative in this, doesn't it? And it was about a third of the way through the film. And I was like, oh my God, these songs are telling you what's going on.
Yeah.
I'll come back to the Under Pressure one because that is literally what broke me when Under Pressure started. But I was watching a bit like, I was kind of a bit like Mikey in that I was not totally engaged right at the beginning because my daughter woke up after I put it on for 10 minutes and I had to leave and then I had to settle her for about an hour. I was with her for about an hour. So I had like a break from like the first 10 minutes, 15 minutes. Then I came back and I kind of forgotten what had gone on in the beginning. And I was making notes, and I think we had this discussion, Marcy, with Shoplifters. I don't really like taking notes if I know it. There's big emotional beats coming. I want to just swim in it. But I knew I didn't have time to do that because it was late at night. So I said, I'll take some notes. And it was when they played the song Tender by Blur. Do you know that song? And it's in the movie, obviously, and it's a big point of the movie. And I looked at my notes and I'd written down Tender, the word, twice already in my notes. And I was like, they are just, the soundtrack is propelling you forward with the story. And so I think Under Pressure is low-key one of the greatest songs ever written in the world. And I think when you hear David Bowie and Freddie Mercury sing, and they've got voices that are vulnerable themselves as well as powerful, which is similar to Callum. He's a powerful dad. He's strong in many ways, but so incredibly vulnerable in other ways. And the same for Sophie, the daughter. Oh, she's such a strong character, but yet you see her aspire to be like all the older kids on holiday, and there's that vulnerability there. And just the collision of that together with the most beautiful, apt lyrics that really sum up what's been going on through the entire movie. And I was gone. I was absolutely, I was gone and I was done. I was ugly crying. I was inhaling wildly just to try and keep my oxygen going. So I think by the time he walks through the door, I'd kind of already, I was aware what was going on, and that was it, and that was inevitable. So that's how I felt at that point.
Oh. I was really curious because I'm a mom. I'm not a dad. I was just wondering, like, how much differently this impacted you both because you both are dads. So I didn't know if, like, the dad factor had a lot to do with the emotionalness of it or not. Would you say yes, probably?
Well, what I would say is I think this is the most real father-daughter relationship I've ever seen in a movie. Mm-hmm. Often what you get is the father of the bride, you know, that kind of relationship, your dad struggling to let go of someone for a comedic way, or the dad with the shotgun, you ain't gonna date my daughter. This had such a gentle truth to how the dad mm-hmm. was with Sophie, in a way that makes you uncomfortable because they're so intimate with each other. They're so intimate. Mm-hmm. And that's how I am with my daughter. That the closeness, like when he's teaching her self-defense in 1 minute, and then in the next minute he's using a cotton pad to clean her face mm-hmm. so gently and delicately.
Yeah.
And just the way he holds her, and just the intimacy. It felt so real, and that it was not dismissing a dad-daughter relationship into being, you know, just a trope. It was a real mm-hmm. important relationship. Whereas I think we often see like the mum providing the emotional support, and I know, and we don't see the mum in this film. So, you know, we can only talk about the dad, but he was a good dad. He was a really good dad, like the type of dad mm-hmm. that listens, and the type of dad that doesn't judge, and the type of dad who wants to be around his daughter. So I think that it felt so honest. I was really into it, really mm-hmm. into it.
I just want to mention really quick, because I am obsessed with awards. We know all this stuff. But Paul Mescal was nominated for an Oscar for this performance. And what I love about it so much is it's quiet. You know how sometimes the over-the-top things are what get noticed and what get nominated. But like you said, Dirk, this is such a real and such a quiet performance. And he is so phenomenal in this movie. And you know he loves Sophie. You know he cares about her. He's just a dad that he's got some issues that he's not taking care of. And he's a dad that messes up, and that's a human thing too. But you know he loves his daughter. Like, you really know that. And I agree with you. I don't think he's a bad dad, because you get parents that, you know, do horrible things to their kids, but you don't get that love either. You don't see that love where, yeah, he screws up a lot, but that love's there. You know that's there for sure.
I think when you asked about being a father, I think I realized why I didn't get that ending too, that it was Sophie was her name, right? It was Sophie at the end, growing mm-hmm. up, like recalling these events. I think I did spend, usually I don't do this, but I did spend a lot of time looking at this almost like it's the dad's perspective of his last summer with his daughter, and almost like it was his movie. And so I think I had lost a lot of that on this watch, because I was really caught up with what it must feel like, what he's doing. They have what I really do love of it was the subtle nuances. Nothing's over explained, and you kind of put the pieces together. A strain with the mom. I mean, she has this question, Tim, why do you still say I love you to mom? She's family. He has this broken arm, which we really don't know about. And that he is troubled, I guess, in terms of just his, what Dirk was talking about. There's like a darkness to him, and you feel like there's something unsettling about him, and then it comes back. So I think maybe that's why, like, I spent too much time thinking of it, like, from a dad, because this is a relationship I would like to have with my daughter. And, it was very close, and even says to her, I think towards the end, he's like, you know, whatever you do, drugs you take, even, I want you to tell me about it. I want you to have that relationship with me, which I think we all want. I made a joke to you guys about using subtitles on this because it's a Scottish accent, and I did throw it on because I was, and there are certain parts I just didn't want to miss. And I'm glad I did, because I have a deficiency, I think, with hearing lyrics not as music but as words that are trying to be spoken. Like Under Pressure, I would have understood like it being part of the movie. But when she does this karaoke scene, which, by the way, this is when I turned code on this dad, because I was like, F you, F off, not singing with your daughter. I don't give a shit. You left her up there. What is the matter with this guy? I didn't give a shit about him at this point. I was so mad. So mad. He lost all credibility to me. But as she's singing, they sing R.E.M. I forget the song, but they have that lyric that just keeps echoing. That losing my religion. That was just a dream. That was just a dream. And it's kind of like, I saw it on screen, which, by the way, the subtitles are weird. It had subtitles for these songs, but not really the rest of the movie. Almost like if the subtitles were telling me this is an important song for this scene. Because the next song, I didn't really know what it was, but it said in the background, it was going, "I'm not a girl who gives up," was one of the lyrics, and it was popping up on screen. And I realized, like, the music had to do what somebody was saying was about the music really did a lot of the emotional lifting for some of these scenes. I don't know what Chumbawamba had to do with the emotion of the scene. That's not still in my head, but
some of it was very on the nose, like the Chumbawamba song while they were drinking. And there was Brand Van 3000 as well. But there was that Brand Van 3000 song. And I was listening to an interview with Charlotte Wells today. And she was talking about how the sound engineer piped that song, Brand Van 3000, through like an underwater filter. So when they jump in the water, there's a scene where they jump in the water and then it's still playing. And I think, coming back to what you said about that was just a dream, it feels like that, like, a lot of the sound there is like dreamlike. A lot of the shots, they're not focused on the protagonists aren't square in the shot. They're like reflected in a TV screen, or they're slightly off to the center, and like there's a fan that's central in the frame. And that's because it's like a memory, isn't it? It's a memory. It's not a perfect representation of what happened. It's somebody's doing their best to recall what happened and their interpretation of what it was. And sometimes I have a memory of going to the circus when I was about two, but now it's a memory of a memory. I can't, you know, it's just me remembering that I have that memory now. And so you make these copies of your memories and they dwindle over time. And I really got that. And I like David Lynch films, and he's very into the idea of dreams and memories and things. And whilst the execution is not David Lynch, there were very similar themes that I was getting in this with Charlotte Wells as well. I was really into it.
Yeah, the reflection in the pool of the parasailing felt very much like, you know, if you were there, you wouldn't look up into the sky because your eyes would hurt. But looking at the pool, I could see chilling on the chair by the pool and looking at the reflection of them in the sky. Another shot I love is somebody takes a Polaroid of them and they're they continue to talk, and it's just on the Polaroid developing.
The picture developing.
Probably, and you can think of it now, like this is a Polaroid she looked at her whole entire life, and that's when it came to be. Is this I know, Marcy, you did the research, but is this like autobiographical? And she was,
in ways, yeah. But to me, the more impressive thing is this is her first like feature length film. Like, I mean, just the ideas, how much thought is put into every little piece of this movie, and how it is something like when you rewatch, like you catch things. And I feel like it's a movie like anytime you would rewatch it, you would catch something else and be like, okay, like there's another piece of the puzzle there. And I just think it's so impressive. I really wish that, I know the BAFTAs does it and she was nominated, but the Oscars don't do it where like a first time director could get a nomination. Like, the BAFTAs do it, and Charlotte was nominated over there. And actually, they also do a rising star. Or it's Best British Film, I'm sorry. So she was nominated for that. And then they do Rising Star. And Frankie, who plays Sophie, she was nominated for a BAFTA. And I wish they'd do something like that over here, because Frankie gives one of the best kid performances I've ever seen in a movie, too. And she really...
I want to mention that.
Their relationship feels so real. Like, Mikey, when you were talking about the karaoke scene, and he feels guilty after, and he's like, well, we could get you singing lessons, but she's so hurt. Well, wait, she's so hurt by what he did to her that she's like, why do you do that? Why do you say you're going to do things that we know you can't afford? And that's her payback to him for not coming down and singing with her. And that's something, you know, a smart 11-year-old would say to get back under their dad's skin for a moment like that. But so just to be a little open and honest, I don't have a relationship with my dad, because my moments with my dad every time was that karaoke scene, just got disappointed. And to the point where it's like, we just don't have to keep doing this. You don't have to keep leaving me up on the stage anymore. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so I love that scene so much because like she gives it right back to him. She's tough. She's a tough little girl. And her dad doesn't mean to, but then that night just gets worse. That night gets so much worse because he leaves her there and, you know, and it's heartbreaking. Yeah.
Is it right that that whole night is kicked off by a conversation they have where Sophie, the daughter, is on the bed and she's talking about, do you ever just feel sad, like your bones are heavy? You've had an amazing day. You've had the best day, but then you come back and you've just got no energy and you can't do anything. And you can see him brushing his teeth and he has that really aggressive reaction to himself in the mirror. He spits at his own image in the mirror. Mm-hmm. Like when I come back to that in my mind, that I presume that is his guilt at feeling he is giving his daughter the same thing that afflicts him. And then that then affects his behavior that night. That was when I thought it was going to go off the rails, that something bad was going to happen to Sophie. And thankfully nothing does. Thank God. But the next day when he realizes and he apologizes and she just brushes it off and she's like, doesn't matter, Dad.
Oh yeah.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Because that is not the reality. The reality is the other days that they've had and the other moments that they've had. And that is, I presume that is Callum's illness. And whether they speak about it or not, and whether Sophie realizes it in the moment or not, she was aware something was different with him. Like when he does his Tai Chi and she's speaking to her mum and he's like, why is he so weird sometimes? You know, so nobody ever speaks about any of that. But there's a little bit of there's a little bit of discovery from both of them along the way.
Yeah. And I like that. So I don't know if the plan originally at the start of this holiday was supposed to be the last holiday that they had together. But I think that night goes so bad. And Callum, you know, we hear a little bit about his childhood and that his parents weren't the best. And I think he realizes he's not the best for Sophie, that he let her out all night, that he didn't do karaoke with her. And when he's apologizing to her in the mud bath, and it is a really genuine, serious apology, I think that's when he realizes, like, I am not the right person for her. And I think that's when he officially decides to end the relationship with her, whatever he ends up deciding.
Wow.
Yeah. And especially whenever they, because I don't know if it's, he might have been like teetering on it in the beginning, but I think it's that. And then whenever she has, after everything he just did to her the night before, it's his birthday and she has everybody sing for He's a Jolly Good Fellow. And then you get that scene of him crying and breaking down. And I think that's when he realizes, like, I am not a good person. I am not good for my daughter.
I think Sophie is his protective factor. But he lives in London. He lives a long distance away from her. And I think that time he spends with her is probably the most magical time in his life. I think she's his protective factor, but for whatever reason, it wasn't enough. And I don't think he would purposely remove himself from that relationship. I think there was an illness involved and he ended his life is what I think. Because we see the rave scenes. So throughout this film, maybe three or four times, we see a very dark dance scene, a rave scene. The room's cluttered; it's full of people. At the start, it's a lady that we realize later on is Sophie as an older lady walking through it, and then towards the end, we see Callum, the dad's there, and he's like having an exorcism performed on him. He's thrown himself around. He looks tortured. And she kind of grabs hold of him at the end, doesn't she? That scene where young Sophie and Callum are dancing to Under Pressure is juxtaposed with that final rave scene. And Callum is is being held by older Sophie. And she's kind of saying it's okay. And I think that's her reflecting when she's looking in the camcorder, sort of telling him it's okay. Perhaps not she forgives him, but that she understands. she understands something.
Yeah, but what I also mean by end relationship too is also like I do think he ended his life unfortunately, but that's what I mean, like where he just, this was like the breaking point where he's like, the one thing that I have going for me, I can't even do that right. And that was kind of like the thing that pushed him over the edge. One kind of sad clue that I think he did unfortunately kill himself was when you're with older Sophie, she has the rug that he bought in Turkey. Mm-hmm. Did you guys notice that?
Oh, wow. I didn't know.
Yeah, it was under the bed.
Mm-hmm.
They did have a scene actually in the middle or towards the last third where he walks into the ocean. I don't see him come back. And I actually thought that's when he killed himself.
Yeah.
How about that scene? He's all dressed in black. He's got a black shirt on, black jeans, and it's pitch black at night. And he wanders into the ocean, which is black. And you just can't see him at all. There's this contrast of like the brilliant white sand. That was one of my favorite shots, I think.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. There's so many good shots in this film, but I really liked that one.
Talking about him too, I was making some excuses for him because I really was upset at the karaoke scene, and then I started thinking, she's 11, and he was even confused by these other kids that were staying at the resort as her older brother, and he's young too, so he must have had her when he was a teenager. I was putting that together, but still, yeah. I was kind of doing the math, and like he's at least 27 years old. There should be no excuse, I guess. In my mind, that feels old enough to be not being a dickhead, I guess, to her.
That's just an illness, and unfortunately, you're not always not in control. That's the wrong phrase, but you do things that you wouldn't normally have imagined you would do. I think that's the reality of it.
Yeah. And also you get context clues that they were very young when they had him and her mother. And when you hear that little bit about his past life as a child, you think maybe he never wanted to be a dad, but you know, sometimes things happen and obviously they were very young. He got thrown into it at a very young age and he obviously does love Sophie, but maybe he just thinks like, this is not for me. Like I cannot do this. And I think we really see that, like I said, in the mud bath when he realizes like everything he did the night before and he's realizing like how much, like he knows how much his parents screwed up his life and he doesn't want to do that for Sophie.
That's funny how uplifting and hopeful I was at the end of the movie and to know that I kind of had it wrong where, you know, when you said there's evidence that he did kill himself is actually puts it very sad for me at the end. But I was thinking like he had this great relationship with her. And maybe they did have a couple more summers together. I couldn't understand why he wouldn't just want, because she says, why don't you move to London? And he was like, there's not enough sand. Like he makes a joke. And I couldn't understand why you would live this far off from your daughter, especially if you have this great relationship. And the mental illness, I think, was present the whole time. I think that's the unnerving feeling that I did get that, you know, I didn't think about until Dirk said it.
Going back to even like what he says, like about his parents. And then he says, like, I live so far away because I was trying to get away from what I like grew up around and whatever. And he's trying to get away from his demons, whatever they are, you know, in Scotland. And that's why he lives so far away. And yeah, this guy has a lot of baggage. And I think he realizes, like, he doesn't want to take it out on Sophie. He doesn't want to mess up her life the way his parents messed up his life. And I think that's a big part of it, you know.
I think we're going to disagree on that. I think she's the protective factor. And other aspects in his life have taken over, sadly. I don't think he would leave her. I personally don't think he would. He would make the decision he was leaving her. Mm. And it was just, obviously, he has left her. But that's just an unintended consequence. That's how I felt. But we can, I know, I mean, that's these sorts of films, that's what's so good about them. There is like literally no exposition. No exposition. Yeah. We're talking about how you're interpreting things because of lyrics of songs that are happening, but we don't get told anything. We don't even get told he's got a mental illness. We don't get told nothing. We don't even get told that was the last time they saw each other. We're left to figure that bit out. And so I think that comes back to what you were saying, Marcy. That is why you know, I said to you before we started, I'm not going to watch this movie again, Marcy. Why do you make me watch sad, bloody movies? Because my life does not need sadness, okay? Yeah. It needs laser guns and spaceships, okay? But I absolutely, I've kind of obsessed with this film now. And just I want to wrap myself up in it. Because it, in a weird way, it was heartwarming as well as heartbreaking. And actually did manage to go back a little bit earlier today and just see, because I said I couldn't watch the first 45 minutes in one go. So I went back and watched the first sort of hour or so today. And the end is at the beginning as well, isn't it? So there's a scene whereby Sophie is interviewing Callum on the camcorder about what he thought he would be doing when he was 11. What did he think he would be doing when he was 30? And we see that at the beginning, and then we see that at the end. And then I didn't realize it was Sophie, adult Sophie, rewinding the camcorder from that point all the way back and going through. So she starts there and she rewinds the camcorder all the way back through the memories. And of course, at the first time I'm watching it, I'm not getting that. Yeah. I'm not getting that. What do you think I am? Einstein? Movie Einstein? No. I had to go and settle my 2-year-old upstairs. I just think they're going on a nice package holiday to Turkey. I didn't quite get that at that time. And so it was probably only when it probably was sort of like the back quarter when I really started to kind of have the realization of what was totally going on. So I'd absolutely fascinated to watch it again. Yeah. And I'd really want to watch it with Kate as well. My wife, and just, I don't know, sharing it, not share the misery, share the joy of being, of being a parent, which there was so much in here about how happy they were together. Even when he was saying she had a big head and she was laughing it off. Or she says, I kissed that boy the other night. And I love his first question was, he's your age though, right? And he's like, well, that's fine then. I was enamored with the two of them. And I think to come back to something you said, this is the best child performance I've ever seen in my life.
For sure.
The best.
And she's
to consider that she's not a trained actor or what you would traditionally call a trained actor is phenomenal. Who is this girl? Put her in all the movies from now on because I just want to see her all the time. She was incredible.
Oh, yeah. It's just unreal, too, because it's not like there's a ton of other people in this movie. It's just the two of them, and she has a lot to do, and she is just amazing in this movie.
And also, she's at the age of becoming a preteen, and you mentioned she, you know, the scene where she kisses that boy. I absolutely love the boy she meets and the flirting that they kind of do, and you know, their arms touch each other. Yeah. But then it's also, I realize now, knowing that's her, in the middle of it, and there is a scene where she is underwater and there's another girl in the group and she's looking at her body more. And you could see now that it's like her discovering who she is also too, and her sexual orientation in that summer. And it just felt very much like a summer vacation. It felt very much like that, you know, 11-year-old coming of age type of feel to it.
Voyage of discovery.
Or even Mikey, do you remember the part where she's on the bed and she has like the little, I think it was like in a drink, but it's like a little naked lady like plastic thing, she's really looking at it for a while. So it's like a summer of discovery. Like it's really cool.
I feel like an idiot that I didn't know that was a mom and that was her, like older.
No, Mikey, don't at all, because like this movie, you have to do a lot of the work with it.
Well,
and I think that's why I love it so much, is you have to do a lot of the work.
There's that scene too where like she wakes up and they're like, happy birthday, Caleb, or something like that. And it was his birthday, and I thought it was like present time. And like, I was like, why would the ex-wife say like, you know, happy birthday? Why would the two of them say happy birthday to this guy? And now I get it. And that's probably why she's reflecting on this summer. It was his birthday, the anniversary of his birthday. And she probably was having all these memories of the last summer she had of him. Dummy.
Well, I think, and as well, that's what I liked. It was like young Sophie was looking forward in her life, because like you said, it was she was discovering all these things, like her sexuality, well, I can't think of anything else. She's her adulthood.
She's also, I think you hear the baby too. So I think it's like she's a newborn mom herself.
And that's so it. So we see young Sophie looking forward and then old Sophie looking back. And it's almost like they're looking back at each other, isn't it? They're looking straight at each other, like mirrored.
Yeah.
So smart. Mm-hmm. So good.
Yeah. But I did want to mention really quick, just because it doesn't happen that often nowadays, but yeah, this whole movie was filmed in Turkey. So I think that's really awesome. Mm-hmm. And I think Turkey's that I've never been, but Dirk knows, like, it is one of my top countries I would love to visit. And
yeah. As soon as I saw it was in Turkey, I was like, that's why she likes it. That's why she likes this film.
It just looks like a beautiful country. Oh my gosh. Like, let's go, guys. Let's go. Let's go to Turkey. Let's do it. Yeah.
Mixtape me up.
Yeah.
2025. Istanbul. Who's that in? Is that in Turkey, Istanbul?
Yes.
Thanks.
Did it.
Thanks.
Well, anything else you guys want? I think we talked about like everything I wanted to, but is there any other scenes or any other moments you want to talk about?
There was, I was glad you confirmed that this was like autobiographical of hers. And I started was thinking about, you guys saw Roma. I don't know if you saw the making of on Alfonso Cuarón. They go into the scene where he's really upset and he's actually like angry at the actors are not getting it right. And he's like pissed and he's like, I don't know what's wrong with me. And he walks off set and he leaves for a little while and he goes for a walk and he realizes, because this is semi-autobiographical story of his life, it was the scene he was shooting was the scene where the father was leaving the family, which his father had done to him. And I wondered, like, for her too, how, if this is like healing for you to go through these traumas with your parents, because you have to get in the mindset of the parent and know what they're going through. And Charlotte Wells really spent a lot of time, I think, I even thought it was from his perspective, being in the mindset, if this was the last summer, if this happened to her, the last summer with her father who was troubled, and to really understand him better, which I thought was, must be some sort of amazing therapy if you're a film director, especially.
Yeah, it's funny you bring that up, Mikey, because just in the last couple years, even like last year, like James Gray and Steven Spielberg both had autobiographical movies of themselves come out. And I was listening to Sean Fennessy explain this once on his podcast, that like the pandemic made a lot of people realize, like, you know, I might not have a lot of time to make the movies I want to make. And I'd really like to tell my life story. And that's why we're seeing so many of these types of movies coming out right now, because it's an effect of the pandemic and everything. I mean, there's been a ton, like, and I mean, big ones too, like we just said, like The Fabelmans for Steven Spielberg last year, and Armageddon Time was James Gray's movie last year. And then, you know, Charlotte Wells had this, and, you know, Roma a couple years ago with Alfonso Cuarón, you know, I know it was before the pandemic, but it must be very therapeutic to have all this stuff that you're, you know, especially like if you're a very private person, like to lay that all out on the table for everybody. I mean, I think that's really brave, in my opinion. That's why I like The Fabelmans so much, because Spielberg really like tells a lot about his parents that he kept a secret for a really long time. And it's like, yeah, I really respect and admire that. You might not like totally love the movie, but you got to admire like what they're doing there with that.
It's Charlotte Wells has said it's not a full autobiographical thing. And she actually tried to create distance between her reality and this film. But in the casting of Sophie, she apparently went to great lengths to try and cast somebody that was not like her as a child, just to get that separation. And after they'd cast Frankie, she absolutely realized she'd just cast a very young version of herself. And she was just like, no, that is me as an 11-year-old. So I absolutely failed in that job. But I think it's not necessarily an exact reflection of what she went through, but it's definitely semi-autobiographical, I think.
Yeah.
Just the most beautiful film, Marcy, I think I've seen in a very long time. And you sold it to me as a sad movie, but you didn't tell me it was going to be so beautiful. So I do appreciate that you picked it.
Well, I just wanted to give you a heads up, like, hey, it's probably going to be tough at times. Like, so I was mentioning like earlier, like the first time I watched this, Dan had the baby in his arms. We were on the couch together, all three of us. And so when I was going to watch it again for this, I said, do you want to watch it with me? He said, nope, I just can't. And he was like, I'm good. So I wanted to at least give you guys a heads up that it, especially being a dad, it might have been harder. But I think like I wanted expectations low because I think this movie is beautiful in so many different ways. And so I guess like maybe you were thinking like, oh, okay, it's just going to be this sad movie about a dad and his daughter. But then, like, you don't know what to expect. And then it's, like, something completely different. It's a very unusual movie. And I don't really know many movies that I've seen quite like this, where it's a lot of, like, you're, like I said, you're building the puzzle while watching it. But
you have to concentrate. You have to really pay attention and concentrate hard, which is not always possible. Yeah. That's not always possible in life. So you're taking a risk there with me watching one of them films. You are rewarded. You are rewarded.
Love this movie too, because it's so true. Because yeah, I think we all have kind of have like, I mean, I kind of have a rocky relationship with all of my parents, but I always like tell Dirk this, like the positive is you see that and you're like, I'm going to be better than that.
Yeah.
And I think Callum tries his best to be better than what he had in this movie. I think Callum is a great dad. I do agree with Dirk. I think he tries every day to be better than what he had growing up. Yeah.
I think he's a great dad who's unfortunately unwell.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and just like kind of touching on that too, this is in the 90s. Mm-hmm. I mean, mental health is not taken seriously now. It definitely wasn't back then, and especially for guys. Men have such a harder time with it, and I think that was why like it's not flat out said in this movie. Maybe nobody's even ever told him about it or thought about it, that that's what's wrong like with him.
Do you think there was also a drug issue there too? Yeah. I got a weird sense of it and like that. So she's the
maybe
one
like in post recovery, yeah.
Yeah, the strobe light scene. I guess like I wanted to. She's the one yelling at him and not getting his attention. And I wanted to know what you guys felt about that meaning. I guess because she's yelling at him to kind of cut his shit. I got a different take on to wake up, or what he's doing.
So
like he's
I
still going to continue
look at
his party.
I look at the strobe lights as him in his deep depression, like that's where he goes when he's zoned out. Like, remember when you see him in the bed passed out? I think when he's like so mentally gone, that's where he goes because he loves dancing. I don't think it's drug. Like, yeah, I think he might have been on drugs at some point, but because the dancing happens so frequently throughout the movie, that strobe club scene, that feels like where he goes when he's mentally lost, like going down the rabbit hole. And that's where he's at.
So apparently they did come up with the backstory. So the director and the producers and they had that chat with Paul. So he was involved and they painted that picture. But then it was interesting, but then they said he had to then bury that information because Callum doesn't know. Callum doesn't know what's wrong with him, or he's unable to articulate it or ask for help, or so it's like he knew what it was and then had to push it away for his performance. He is Irish, Mars, as I think you said, didn't you?
Mm-hmm. He's Irish in real life, but Scottish.
He did the accent the whole way through, and when he was talking to like Frankie, the actress, he would talk to her in Scottish, in his Scottish accent, outside of filming and everything.
Oh wow. That's cool.
Yeah. Until the last day, apparently.
Oh.
And freaked her out.
I love that. I gotta say, just like a little bit of behind the scenes stuff. I do follow him on Instagram, and they just seemed like the two of them and Charlotte, like the three of them just had a blast promoting this movie. Like every red carpet I saw them on. And then I know like it didn't get like a Best Picture nominee, but for this little tiny movie, for him to get nominated for Best Actor, it feels huge. And I was like rooting for it, you know, because I love Paul, but I love this movie that it's like, this is going to bring more awareness to this movie just with his nomination. Yeah. And he is just like such a sweet guy. Every time I see him, I don't know. He like makes my heart burst.
It's the accent.
I love
That's
him.
What it is.
I love him. You got to watch Normal People. Mm. My gosh, just you'll fall in love with him. Like he's absolutely perfect in that show. Like, and he, oh my gosh, okay, he's gonna be, they're making a sequel to Gladiator 2, and he is gonna be the lead actor in it. And I'm so excited.
Shirt off the whole time.
Well, he had his shirt off in this a bit, didn't he?
He looks good. He's got like not a super crazy built body. He's got like a nice dad body. He's a very hot dad. I will just say this.
Let's not be like Kino from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
He looks, but I like that, like, you know, it wasn't like he was like super ripped or whatever. I've seen him in other things where he's super ripped and it's like, oh, he has like a more normal looking physique.
They look, he absolutely agree with you. I was being flipping, but he looks like a normal guy, doesn't he?
So you guys liked it?
Hated it.
Yeah. I told Dirk before we got on, like the first 45 minutes, I was just like, I think it was like I wasn't in the mood, but I was like, I don't.
Yeah.
It just felt, I don't know what. I wasn't feeling anything. And especially after that karaoke, I was like, fuck this guy. Fuck this dad. I don't give a shit. And then honestly, exactly what you guys were like. Yeah, really. And then Under Pressure came on, and then honestly, like listening to you guys talk about it deeper, I realized I needed to sit with it more, I think. And you guys really, I think, are emotionally intelligent to notice a lot of these things that I missed.
Correct. But I'd read a synopsis, like a 4-line synopsis, just to kind of see what it was about. And it kind of gave you the impression that I thought he had like a terminal illness from reading the synopsis. That's what I thought going into it. He had a terminal illness. And I already kind of had I knew that this was the last time they spent together. So I was kind of looking for clues and like inconsistencies in it. Like it was a memory, that it was a memory that she'd constructed, like a bit Lynchian, I suppose, in a way. But there was just like a scene here or there that was out of place. Nothing like really crazy. Like the bit when they jump in the ocean at the beginning, he doesn't have his cast on. And I was like, oh, he doesn't have his cast on there. Why doesn't he have his cast on? But apparently it was just because they filmed that right at the end, but they wanted to take all of the conflict out of the relationship. They didn't want you to think that the drama was going to come from the relationship. They wanted to protect that, so they put in right at the beginning all these lovely moments that they shared, so that you could see how they really are with each other, and that their love was there. So then you didn't think that's where the drama was going to come, and then actually all the fights, I guess, if for want of a better term, were from outside forces, mental illness.
That's interesting. Really,
yeah, it is interesting. But I was kind of looking for it then, and maybe I knew that there was more going on than we were being told. Maybe, Mikey, that's what I'm saying, is that I kind of maybe knew that.
I think if somebody told me this is, you know, the last summer that she spends with her dad, I would have kind of been like, oh, I wish I didn't know that, because I like discovering things in a subtle way. And it actually worked against me because I didn't know really. I was hopeful. I'd be like, oh, he repaired his relationship with his daughter and they're going to have all this time together.
That's what's so great about you, Mikey.
No, yeah, that's what's great about you. Yeah, Mikey, you are a silver lining.
Hopelessly optimistic about life.
Hey, I mean, like carrying over from last week, you were Optimus Prime last week and now you're optimistic. There we go.
Mikey, play the drums. Perfect. And on that bombshell, that's it, right? Are we happy?
Yeah. I'm really glad you guys liked it, and I think you might one day eventually watch it again, which is what I kind of wanted, because I think it's an odd one, but this is one where it's like you actually benefit a lot from rewatching this. Like, it might not seem like at first, like, oh, I should rewatch that to catch this and this. But you do, and it's really incredible. So I'll just say that.
I kind of hate when certain things take songs over, but I think forever, like Under Pressure, this movie, I won't be able to listen to that song and not think of that scene. So,
and if you watch it again and you listen to that version of Under Pressure, because then they strip all the music out and then they bring the score in underneath the words as well. It's quite a complicated thing that they're doing. Oh my goodness, it made my knees wobble.
But we love David Bowie on this pod, so hey, I did it again. You're welcome.
Speaking of David Bowie, now what we've got to do is we've got to pick a song. So this is the movie mixtape, inspired by the spirit of when you would make mixtapes for friends, when you were getting to know each other and we're sharing movies we love instead of songs we love. But we're going to stick a song with each of these movies and we're going to add them to our movie mixtape playlist, which we will include a link to in the show notes so you can listen along with our song choices. And we alluded to it in the last episode, but what we think we're going to be doing is putting on our IG stories all of our three picks and getting you guys to vote on your favorite song choice. Mm-hmm. And then maybe at the end of the year, we'll tally them all up and see who's won. And they can get a prize. Mikey's shaking his head. Doesn't want
Dirk
to be
just
involved.
Wants to win more prizes.
I know.
He wants more confirmation.
You get another intervention. That's what happens.
He wants more confirmation how great he is at picking music.
Right. Well, shall I go first this time? I feel like Marcy should go last.
Okay. I'll go last. That's fine.
Because it's your movie. So we build to the good one.
Okay.
So I've gone for a song by a band called Big Thief. And the song is Mythological Beauty. Do you know that song?
Yeah. So I thought you were going to say Paul because they have a song called Paul.
So Mythological Beauty is about the lead singer's remembering her mum. And so it's memories of memories and sort of having a... some of the memories are... a rose tinted maybe, and she's, you know, her mum has this mythological beauty because of everything, you know, the way that she saw her when she was a child. And so that made me really think of Sophie with her dad and sort of reflecting back on the memories of this holiday. And I love that song, Mythological Beauty. So that's my choice. Big Thief, Mythological Beauty.
Great pick.
Thanks. It's gonna win.
We talked about what we were doing over the break, and this is a movie about, you know, a flawed father that does his best and has a great relationship with his daughter. And about less than a month ago, my father-in-law passed away. And we were kind of retelling stories that we each individually had about him over the last, like, month. And he raised two daughters. One of them I married. And at my wedding, they danced to Benny More, Como Fue, which is How It Was, and kind of owns that song. I guess I was thinking of him when after the movie ended, and I was trying to think of the father figures in my life, and he came to mind, so that's my pick.
Oh, Mikey, nice. That's beautiful. Oh, I might cry. That's so sweet. Well, I'm so sorry for your loss, Mikey, but thank you for sharing that lovely story. So, oh. This is like therapy, right? Yeah, really. This pod's like therapy.
Therapy mix.
We'll get there.
Oh, no, you have given Marcy an idea there.
Well, my song is kind of like therapy, too, for me in a way to, like, talk about it a little bit. But I've picked this band before. It's Odessa, but it's them with featuring Zyra. She sings on this song. And the song is called It's Only, and it is talking about a romantic relationship in the song, but there are two lyrics that made me think of Sophie and her dad. I know that sounds weird, but like when I say the lyrics, it will hopefully make sense, and then I'll explain it a little bit more. But the first one is like, I heard the news today that you're not mine to keep. And then the other one is, I heard the news today that you're not mine to save. And we can love somebody as much as we want to, but at the end of the day, they make their own decisions. And if they want to be a part of your life or not, that's up to them. And so that's why I picked that song. And now I'm emotional, so you're welcome.
We did it. We did it.
We did it.
Three.
We did it.
Three amazing.
Good.
Some weeks, Mikey, the choices are terrible. Really terrible.
Yeah, like straight trash.
Awful.
Yeah.
Like for a Ninja Turtle movie? Yeah.
No, that was good. That was fun.
My choice was good for Ninja Turtles.
Yeah, it was.
Whatever. But this week, as you Americans say, we knocked it out of the park. Well done, everyone. Yeah. If you have comments on lovely package holidays, or maybe when your arm rubbed up against someone else while you were playing Road Rage on a on a bike in an arcade, why don't you write in to us? Our email address is themoviemixtapepod@gmail.com. As we're recording this, we haven't yet released any of these new episodes, so we don't have any emails. But guess what, guys? I'm being really honest with you now. We have figured out how to do voicemails. Like literally 5 minutes before we came on, Mikey went, I think this button here, if you can use this button here and it'll do them. It does.
That's how I sound? That's your impression of me, my voice? That's how I sound? Guys,
yeah, I taped your voice and replayed it through my microphone. So if you want to send a voicemail, don't be afraid anymore. Don't be afraid of Luddite nature, because Mikey is on board and he knows what button to press now for the voicemails to appear. So themoviemixtapepod@gmail.com. Why don't you tell us what you've been watching since we've been off the air? And Mikey, how is the art coming? Because we've been uploading them to the Instagram, which you can follow, that @_moviemixtape. And he showed us some. He showed us the Ferris Bueller art the other day, and my jaw dropped to the floor. It's probably the most smartest, intelligent podcast art you'll ever see in your entire life. And that is not that is not pie in the sky. That is truth. Okay.
Thank you. I joked to Dirk. We don't have enough time to watch these movies and make notes. I said I'm going to start drawing as I'm recording these episodes.
So drawing it live. Please do. I would love to see that. But yeah, Mikey, your art always incredible. Maybe we should post the Ferris one now, like when we post, like around this time.
All right, I'll
because
save
the
it.
Ferris art, I just like that it's Cameron looking at Cameron, because that's the scene. It's just so clever. It's so good, Mikey. I love it so much.
We'll save that art until this episode drops. And that is a banger. So go follow us over at @_moviemixtape. And also there, if you check out our stories, probably, because that's probably where we'll stick it, you can vote which was your favorite song. Okay, brilliant. So that's it. All of us are nearly done now, aren't we? We just need to decide what movie we're going to do next time. And it's my choice. Mm-hmm. And guess what?
Mm-hmm.
I still haven't decided.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my God.
Hey, do you know... So, unlike Marcy, I don't really like filling my spare time watching good movies. I like to watch absolute balderdash and just
gotta balance it out.
Yeah, because I know that when I get back on here, Marcy's going to be getting me to watch every single film that was nominated for an Academy Award in 1976. So I need to get in my Attack of the Killer Tomatoes while Marcy's not looking. So. I think what I'm going to do, I'm going to go for a different type of movie than we've covered before. So I don't know how it's going to work, but what I am excited about is Mikey's art for this episode. So that's why ultimately I've picked this one. Okay. So we are going to do the recent music documentary, Meet Me in the Bathroom.
Whoa.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Whoa. Which is a documentary about the indie sleaze music movement of The Strokes and the Yeah Yeahs.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Karen O'Art.
So that's Karen O'Art, baby. So that's what we're going to do next time.
We've not
done a documentary before. I've got no idea how we're going to talk about it. But I also felt very intimidated by Marcy's pick and felt that I couldn't adequately follow it up. So I've gone off on a tangent. So yeah, that's what we're going to do. Well, I've seen it. It's good. I like it.
Fun. Yeah, I can't wait to hear about poetically talking about the yeah. I'm looking forward to this.
What if you were like, I hated it, but I picked it anyways?
Wouldn't that be a ruse? That would be a ruse to get Mikey just to draw a Karen O.
I could see you doing that, though. That's the thing.
Machiavellian. But yeah, so join us next time, probably in 2 weeks, a.k.a. fortnightly. But we love you all. Thank you for joining us on the Movie Mixtape. Bye.
Wait, who's saying it? Oh, bye. Bye.
Suck on that, you suckers.
That was great.
Oh, God, don't complain. Nobody writing a complaint.
Mixtape is a podcast hosted by Dirk, Mikey P, and me, Marcy. Episodes edited by Dirk and Marcy. Show art by Mikey P. Our logo comes from Iron Tooth Design. Follow us on Instagram at @the_moviemixtape or email us at themoviemixtapepod@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. Bye.
I was trying to think of like Sophie though, like Dad, they're like old. Or thought they're like
that's
young.
Pretty good. That's really good.
Yeah. Well,
Derek will tell you it's trash, though.
No, that was not bad. But remember, they're from Edinburgh and not Glasgow.
Well, I don't know the difference.
So Edinburgh is a softer Scottish accent,